And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me. Kayla Anderson, News 2.
What's up?
That's her. Yeah, we're going to be here for the next, he'll be here into the second hour of the program. We're here at Bridgestone Arena, inside here at Jack Daniels Barrel House, our home. You know what that means. It means the Predators have a game tonight. They've got a game tonight and Thursday. A couple of big Eastern Conference teams rolling into town. And if you look down stairs, you can tell that the Maple Leafs are in the house because they treat every game like a playoff game.
They sure do, and they bring all the media.
They bring half their city. It looks like a first-round playoff matchup downstairs. It's game 74 for the Predators.
It really is.
Game 73 for the Leafs.
Yes.
Like I said, for 82 games in the regular season, they treat it like the playoffs. So it's going to be a fun night here. It's 90s night.
Oh, boy.
So if you're coming, I don't know exactly what that means. When I say 90s to you, Kayla, you say?
I say, like, still I was wearing neon.
Okay, neon would work.
And
that makes sense.
And I was wearing colored jeans.
Colored jeans? Really?
Yeah, like the purple and burgundy.
Oh, okay.
Is a bad look.
Was that the holes in the ripped jeans? Was that 90s or no?
Yeah, there was a little holes in ripped jeans.
Was that carryover from the 80s?
Yeah, I think that now it even carries over to the 2000s.
Yeah, I think I've seen them come back. Everything cycles back.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I think 90s, I think grunge, right, music. I think the Seattle
Pearl Jam
movement, right? I don't know. 90s, well, I was poor. It sucked for me.
I was
trying to get through college and try to make a career work. And I just remember trying to find pizza buffets just to eat, you know, something that
what
could.
What was your favorite?
Well, back then it was, and I just drew blanks on. And they used to be here, and they've since gone away.
Not Little Caesars.
No, I know. That's the first thing that popped in my head.
I ate a lot of Little Caesars.
I know. It's not Little Caesars. And why am I drawing blanks on the pizza joint that used to be here, too, but they were in Lexington?
Is it a buffet?
Yes, it's a buffet. And so you go load up, and that basically turns into your meal for the day.
Oh, yeah.
And you get out of there for $7, and you're done for the day.
And that's the 90s life,
that's what I think of. Like, I get depressed, when I think of the 90s. Like, I don't have a ton of memories of just – other than being stupid and partying and rubbing two nickels together.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I mean, I had fun.
Yeah. I mean, I was small.
You were small?
I was definitely not partying at that point, but I was close. Close after the 90s.
What does that mean, I was small?
I was young.
Okay.
I was a younger child.
Yes.
But I did experience a lot of partying in my younger days in high school.
Yeah.
So it wasn't too far after that.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it, but I was kind of glad to move out of the 90s.
Me too.
It'll be fun here tonight. There's a lot of people, obviously people younger than me, that's their wheelhouse. Like, they have much probably better memories. I also think of Blockbuster Video.
Blockbuster.
How about pagers and beepers? Did you bring a beeper tonight to the game?
So, guess what? My best friend in high school, like 99, so that still counts.
Yes.
We thought she was so cool because she had a pager. And so when we would go out,
her mom would page her.
And we'd have to find a phone.
You have to find a phone, yes.
What was the point of a pager?
To find a phone and call somebody. It's just to let you know, like, hey, I need to talk to
you.
That's just a heads up. You know, that's that version of texting.
Yeah, it is.
Right? Because you could leave the message of call me.
Right. It's just so weird now if you think about it, right?
It's kind of laughable. But back then, like you said, in fact, when I think 90s, I should say that. That was my first phone.
So you had a pager.
I was in my 20s. I was in my 20s. My 7-year-old has a phone. I mean, it's not active.
Crazy?
It's not active, but he has a phone that he plays around on. But he wants it to be active. And I'm like, no, you're 7.
Yeah, I like
you
that
don't
plan,
get
though.
A phone, but, I mean, not that you can call and text. Like, not now.
Yeah.
You can do things on it, but just not that. So, yeah, I was in my 20s when I got my first phone. Late 20s, actually.
I didn't have a phone till 14, 15.
I didn't have a choice at 14 or 15. It's not like I could have had one. It's not like at 14 I could have said, I want a phone, and they would have said, my parents would have said, and what do you mean?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
We have a landline.
Right.
You want to take your landline out with you? What do you want to do?
Or the car phones. Those
yeah,
big,
but
those
that was, yeah, we did. They were huge, and they were
big.
Mounted.
Yeah.
It was so ridiculous. By the way, in radio, just to date myself a little bit more, in radio, you know, we still have bad habits in this business, and we go, let's go to Joe on a car phone. Like, back then, it made sense. Like, Joe really was calling on a car
phone.
But
they're not on car phones.
But they're not on car phones.
No.
And so I laugh when I hear radio personalities. Let's go down to Tammy in Murfreesboro. She's on a car phone.
You're going, what?
No, she's not on a car phone.
No, there's no such thing.
No, she's in her car.
Yeah.
And she is on a phone, but it's not a,
it's
car,
not a car phone.
Phone. Yeah. So if there's any people in the biz listening, if you do
don't,
that.
Don't call it that.
Just remember, we don't. They're not car phones anymore. Just
no.
Keep that in mind.
Thank goodness.
So there's a lot of things to digest.
Mm-hmm.
Belmont plays tonight.
Yeah.
I boldly predicted yesterday on the show that it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to use the word buyer's remorse because I came really strong yesterday on the show. But then yesterday, the more
no.
I thought about it, the more nervous I started getting. Like, yesterday I felt it. Like, it is going to happen for the Bruins. I'm like Nick Saban now, pounding the desk.
Yes.
It is going to happen for Belmont. And then yesterday I started just looking over the matchup and just thinking about their history, and I'm like, oh. But I still feel good.
Okay.
I'm not going to pretend like it's the level of yesterday. Now it's kind of a nervous
okay.
feeling because, let's be honest, Belmont's never done it.
Nope.
And I've been burned by them in my bracket many, many times over the years by picking them.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe this is a very conducive matchup for them. I believe that it fits their style. And I believe it's a good look for them to get their first tournament win. But – they still got to do it. I'm a little nervous because the Temple coach, it's going to be his last game
yes.
whenever the it's done. It's his last game, and I hate that whole last game for the coach because then you've got an inspired team to
sure.
let's not let it end here. Let's keep playing for coach. And so that's the part that started making me nervous. I didn't think that through enough yesterday. Mm-hmm. And then when I started thinking about it more yesterday and last night and this morning, I'm going – oh, I don't like that scenario. I hate that because sometimes teams really,
rally.
Really respond and rally to that.
But on the other side of it, you have to think, look at how this Belmont team got into the tournament and how jacked and how much they want to respond and prove they deserve to be in this tournament. Because like you said, Rick Bird told me after they got in, he thought there was a 20% chance that this Bruins team got into the tournament.
Oh, I thought it was less.
Yeah, Dylan Windler said we really did not have hopes.
The fact that it was early that we found out right away, I was like, whoa.
I know.
Because, I mean, the longer it would have went, the more – I mean, my numbers would have just kept going further.
Yep.
Like, if we were 20 minutes in, I would have been like, that's done.
They're
like 5%. They're
yeah.
not getting in.
And, I mean, we were sitting there ready to go, like ready to start filming it. We weren't – fully prepared for it to happen that early, though. So I think everyone was kind of just sitting around, looking around, comes up on the TV, and I mean, that place just
erupted. Yeah.
And I mean, I was shocked.
Yeah.
It was a pure, genuine, raw emotion right there from that team. But I think they're motivated now. I'm like, you know, they know that they're in, but they've got to do something about it.
Well, VCU, you know, and it's not to that level. Like, people were making the case, and so you're right. So people were making the case, and I said that to Scott Corley, Belmont's AD, yesterday as they arrived in Dayton. He called in, and I said, look, you had Scott Van Pelt have Rick Bird on on SportsCenter after Win 800. That is national recognition. You're on SportsCenter, and we're going next to Belmont to talk to Rick Bird. I was like, whoa, I got to watch this. You had Jay Billis beating their drum saying Belmont belongs in.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you had some help from guys with – big platforms on a national stage. And so there is that kind of feeling like, okay, we had people go to bat for us.
Sure.
We had a lot of people say nice, like, we need to do this. Because you're right. I think VCU used it when Shaka Smart was there, when everybody complained of how in the world did you let VCU in? And they started in Dayton.
Yeah.
And everybody said the entire time, all the way the first 48 hours after the selection show, how could VCU be in this tournament? Everybody said it.
Yeah.
They do not belong in this tournament. They went to the Final Four.
Oh, man, I remember that year.
And so you know they use that as motivation.
Absolutely. But I like the point you brought up about how there was guys out there, and they were pulling for Belmont. They were putting Belmont's name in every second they could. Even Magic Johnson at the OVC tournament.
Yes, he did.
He tweeted that, or he said that on air. That he wanted both Murray State and Belmont. That's coming from a pretty big source right there that, like, you got to get these guys in. They deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, so there is that pressure. I still feel good. I'm not going to pretend that I feel as strongly as yesterday, but I'm still coming with it. I'm saying that Belmont gets it done tonight. They are going to win, and they'll be playing Maryland next.
Yep.
Okay, the more I can say it out loud, I think the more I can build this back up in my head
the
like
confidence
I did yesterday. Yesterday I was over the top. By the way, good job by Marquise. He nailed it. Mr. Gaddies. Mr. Gaddies. How did I forget Mr. Gaddies? You know, they used to know me by name. Hey, Darren, we got the table for you over there. Mr. Gaddies. How could I forget Mr. Gaddies?
That was a caller that helped me out on that one.
Well,
you know, I'm not from here, so.
Good pull by the caller. Whoever called in and told Marquise, Mr. Gaddies, you nailed it. That's what I was looking for.
Dang.
Thank you.
I've never heard of it.
Oh.
Was it just like dynamite? Like,
well, I mean, you know.
For a buffet.
For a buffet, right.
That's all you could ask
you
for.
You can't really go too over the top about a buffet. It was good pizza for a reasonable price.
I
would
complain.
Go in there and I would just absolutely slaughter it.
Oh, yeah.
And I would be good for the day. And I wouldn't eat again until the next day.
That's the way to do
so,
it, man.
And that's what you do when you're rubbing nickels together. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk to Jimmy Dykes. ESPN and SEC Network, we do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Penny. I don't have your team going very far in my bracket.
No.
Just putting that out there. Back here on Darren and Donick, Darren McFarland, Kayla Anderson. News 2 here, Bridgestone Arena. Inside, Jack Daniels Barrel House, Predators and Maple Leafs tonight. 7 o'clock puck drop. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6. By the way, the game bracket challenge is back. Sign up and play for your chance to win great prizes. If you can create the perfect bracket, you could win $1 million. I could have used that in the 90s. Now all those teams have been selected. Go to thegamenashville.com, fill out your bracket to compete for a chance to win great prizes. The game bracket challenge brought to you by Sudden Service, where we were yesterday. We had a great time up in Gallatin and Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Let's say hello and good morning to Jimmy Dykes, college basketball analyst for ESPN and SEC Network. Jimmy, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We are excited here. I have admitted on the air that yesterday I got caught up. We had Scott Corley on, Belmont AD, and I kind of went over the top, pounding the table that Belmont was going to win tonight. And I admitted on the air in the first segment, I woke up and I don't have buyer's remorse, but I've got to build myself back up again because now the nerves are kicking in. I don't know if the Bruins get it done in Dayton or not. What do you think?
Well, they have Rick Bird, right? He made the trip.
He did. Yep, he's there.
Yeah, they're going to be fine. That guy, he would win in any league, any conference out there. And I was actually on Coach K and Beyond last week with Coach Krzyzewski on his radio show. We talked about Rick, and Coach K said the same thing, that guy just – he really can coach ball. And Coach K said, I watch Rick's teams and think to myself sometimes, I wish I could coach like that. So if you're a Belmont fan, that's about as high of a praise as you can get from a coaching aspect. And, you know, there's great value in knowing who your team is this time of the year, and his guys do. They know how to play. They know how to score. They got guys that could play at any level. And everybody's going to go into their game day with, I'm not sure how I feel about my team, but that's just normal. That's just how you're going to feel. And what I like about Rick is such a quick turnaround from finding out Sunday night that you're in the first four and then you get on a plane Monday morning and all of a sudden, boom, you're playing Tuesday. And coaching is a big part of this game. And Rick's going to be dialed in and keep it simple for his kids and try not to give them too much because it's more about how Belmont plays tonight as much as anything.
Yep, it's going to be a lot of fun tonight as Belmont tries to knock down that door, get their first ever NCAA tournament win tonight against Temple. Now, you were here all last week. Great job working the SEC tournament. We're excited here. Everything we think went fantastic here in the arena we're sitting in right now. I want to ask you this, Jimmy. We always tell teams to be playing the correct way down the end of the regular season and into conference tournament play and beyond. You're supposed to be playing the right brand of ball. Well, that's exactly what Auburn is doing. They are at their best at the right time, yet they cut down the nets here. They get a 5 seed. They're going out to Salt Lake City. Am I wrong? But I was a little surprised that Auburn got a 5 seed. They've been doing everything that you're supposed to do, winning toward the end of your regular season. They win the conference tournament, yet they're a 5 seed. Did you agree with that, or were you a little confused like me?
No, I agreed with it because there's 4 regions. So if you're a 5 seed, that means the committee looks at you as a top 20 team. If my Arkansas math degree holds true. Actually, I wasn't a math major, but I'm pretty sure that's how it would equate, right?
Yeah. Even so, my Kentucky education says you're right.
Yeah, but my Arkansas education tells me that means they're viewed as a top 20 team, and that's about where they are. You know, they were. I don't know what the final poll was, but they didn't get into that top 25 poll until the last couple of weeks. They got hot at the right time. I thought they caught a break, because if you're in the building like I was, that Kentucky-Tennessee game was a Final Four, semifinal / national championship type feel, and both teams completely had to empty their tank in every area in that ball game, and Tennessee won. I knew it was going to be a hard turnaround for them less than 24 hours later, and been taking nothing away from Auburn. They may have won the game in any other situation because of how well they're playing, but it's not an easy trip now for Auburn to go out west like they are to take on a New Mexico State team that's just as hot as they are. They've won 8 or 9 in a row now themselves, and maybe more than that. I just know that Auburn and New Mexico State in the round of 64 are the two teams that have won at least 8 games, and no other 64 matchup has that. So that won't be an easy game for Auburn, but it won't be an easy game for New Mexico State either, because Auburn is, like you said, man, they're playing as well as anybody in the country right now with their style. The problem is they can also have a game where they go 5 for 28 from the 3-point line, they get bounced. So I don't, you know, there's a difference in getting to the Final Four and winning. Like I think Auburn's one of the 20-25 teams that could win 4 games and get there. I just don't believe they can win 6 and win it all. I think there's only about 6 or 8 teams that can do that. Kentucky and Tennessee are 2 of those 8.
Interesting. I realized Tennessee, and we had been talking about it going into that stretch at the end of their regular season, like we're really going to know what this Volunteers team is about, because their final 8 games or so are really, really difficult. A couple against Kentucky, some tricky, tricky road games with LSU and Auburn, and, you know, I think they went, 6-4 in their final 10. What do you make of Tennessee, their makeup, since you saw them here and they went all the way until Sunday, and obviously you can't hold Sunday against them on gauging the rest of the way, but do they have what it takes to go really, really far, or is there a little cause for concern on your end?
No, they're a real team. They're the real deal, and they had a phenomenal year. I thought they should have been a 1 seed regardless of losing that game on Sunday. The selection committee, they waited till the end of that game to see if it was going to be Gonzaga or Tennessee. I would have put Tennessee there just because if it's that close, like if you're literally sitting there on Selection Sunday and you're the selection committee waiting for the result of the Tennessee-Auburn game to decide is it Tennessee or Gonzaga, then you completely missed on the common sense index, which Tennessee beat Gonzaga head-to-head. Just put Tennessee there in the 1 seed and move on. But they didn't do it. But it tells you the respect that Tennessee has nationally. You know, they're a real team, and all of them have areas where they're not as good as you'd like to be as a coach. Tennessee has a couple of those, but they're built to win the thing as much of anybody else. The problem is they're in the same bracket with Virginia, and I think Tennessee and Virginia are very, very similar. Like if they get to that matchup, and the winner of that goes to the Final Four, then you're probably the odds-on favorite to win the national championship. Duke is the favorite in most people's eyes, but if Duke wins it, it will be the worst 3-point shooting team in the history of the tournament to cut down the nets. I just think Duke's going to have one of those games where they shoot true to form, which is about 27-28% from the 3-point line. They could get knocked out, and Tennessee, Virginia, even North Carolina, Gonzaga, Kentucky, they're just a little bit more consistent. They don't have the the pop and the power of Duke. Like when them dudes are rolling, they don't look like Duke, but they look like themselves more consistently than Duke looks like themselves.
When you talk about the makeup of this Tennessee Volunteers team, you obviously think, first of all, you have Grant Williams, a two-time player, SEC Player of the Year. You got the big man, Admiral Schofield. But really a point guard that has been underrated and not talked about as much in college basketball this season is Jordan Bone. How much does he have to be consistent in this tournament to give them a chance to go deep?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's no more pressure on him than any other point guard that on one of those top eight teams. Like, they have to play well. It all starts with them. Like, you watch college football and college basketball, just answer the simple question, how good is the guy with the ball? Mm-hmm. And in football, it's the quarterback, and in basketball, it's the point guard. Like, how good is your guy that has the ball? And Jordan Bone is outstanding. I've said it the last three or four weeks on our games on ESPN. If I had to pick a point guard to try to get me to the national championship game, I'm taking Jordan Bone over Cassius Winston at Michigan State, John Morant kid at Murray State.
Wow.
He's a little wild and too much of a gambler's mentality for me to say, hey, let's go win a national championship. He's going to be a phenomenal pro. Like, he'll be a phenomenal pro, but I'm just saying, what am I going to get on my point guard for six straight games? I'm taking Jordan Bone, and I think he'll hold up.
When we talk about the matchup with Colgate, yes, we all know now the toothpaste jokes have been rolling with the Colgate. But with this matchup,
I got a stare yesterday.
You did?
Yeah, it didn't go over well.
It didn't go over well.
Yeah, Willie just kind of looked at me like, really?
I mean,
come on, I got to try.
You got to put it out there.
Yeah.
This is a team that can, guess what they do? They can shoot the three. They're good beyond the arc. And this is a team that, you know, could disrupt Tennessee a little bit, considering the fact that that's what Auburn does to them. And it's not a good matchup.
Well, you're right. No, you're exactly right. They're a good three-point shooting club. They just don't have the speed, team speed that Auburn has. No one is faster in college ball than Auburn in terms of their team speed. That's what sets up their three-point shooting as much as anything, is how fast they get the ball down the floor, how fast they move the ball at all five spots. And they're just a hard team to cover. So it's going to be a little different look. Colgate can shoot three. I looked at their percentages, but they play a little different style. It's not going to be that warp speed that Tennessee had to face against Auburn, but those teams are dangerous. You know, if you're going to pull off an upset in this tournament and you're from a smaller conference, you have to have the ability to score and make threes.
Yep.
Because you're not going to have a big guy inside that can dominate a power conference team. So the recipe is there. But, you know, Tennessee is a strong defensive team. I haven't looked at their numbers this week. I know they've been in the top 30 all season long in offensive and defensive efficiency for the most part. So they'll be dialed in. That Tennessee's been tested now. When you go through that last, I think you guys talked about it there, the last seven or eight games that they have at Ole Miss, at LSU, Kentucky twice, once on a neutral floor, and just all the hard games they've had, they're ready. They're ready. And every school out there, every fan base out there is going to see that, oh, no, this is how we could lose, and the coaching staff does too. But I love Tennessee. I think they're a Sweet 16, Elite 8 team, and then they're just one win away from that Final Four, and they're deserving of it. It's an easy team for Volunteer fans to cheer for. I know they're just what they stand for and how they handle themselves. The post-game interview with Laura Rutledge after the Kentucky win was magical. It kind of spoke to who they really are and their core values of things. So I'm pulling for all those SEC teams, and certainly Tennessee's one of those.
Does Florida beat Nevada? And can Ooh. If your answer is yes, can they beat Michigan?
Well, they can beat both of those teams. It's not going to be easy. I think Florida's the only team in the SEC in the first round that's not a favorite. I might be wrong on that, but I think that's the only one that they're not favored to win their opening round game. The thing about Nevada is they're up against a Florida defense that's really, really good. Like, that's going to trap. They're going to lock in and defend, and they are more than capable of holding Nevada to 60 points. So Nevada has to understand how good that Florida defense is. And Nevada could win the game by 15, 18 points because they got some future pros and size, and they can really shoot it. But they shoot some crazy shots. Like, their shot selection at times is wild. And if they get in that game, they take some bad shots early, and Florida's defending. That's a problem for Nevada because Florida's really good on that end of the floor. So if Nevada's not careful and they come in freewheeling and taking bad shots, and then they're having to take some hard guarded shots against that good Florida defense, you can look up at the end of that game and Florida advances like in a 57-56 ball game, absolutely.
Hmm. Yeah, Nevada was one of those feel-good stories out of Nashville here last year when they came back. They were way down to Texas, came all the way back, and ended up getting to the Sweet 16, and it all started right here in Nashville. Jimmy, always appreciate the visit, as always, and we'll do it again here soon. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks,
Jimmy. Yeah, let's do it again. Y'all have a good day.
All right, you too. That is Jimmy Dykes, college basketball analyst for ESPN and SEC Network. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about this on the other side. Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game. David Poile, Predators GM. A little 90s theme here. You'll hear that all day. It's 90s night, Bridgestone Arena. David Poile, Predators GM. Maybe he'll be dressed up in 90s attire. He'll join us at 11:15 here at the desk at Jack Daniels Barrel House. Darren McFarland, Kayla Anderson, News 2. Alongside, we just had a good conversation with Jimmy Dykes, and everybody is trying to figure out. Look, I will admit, my questions are very selfish. They're self-serving. I am trying to figure out my bracket. So every guest we have on until this tournament starts, I am going to be asking about games that I feel like I'm throwing darts at.
That's very smart of you.
You know? I mean, I need to win.
I do, too. I've got five brackets.
I had Villanova. This is how bad it is for me. This is how desperate I am. I had Villanova winning it all last year and didn't win. I did not win.
It didn't win.
I did not come in the play money because we do it for play money, right?
Yeah,
It's all for fun.
All for fun.
That's why I do it, just for fun. I did not come in the top three, and I had Villanova cutting down the nets. So
you need help.
It's clearly you cannot just win a bracket by picking the champ. There's a lot of other games. You gotta kill it on Thursday and Friday. And I did not do a good job last year on Thursday and Friday. So I've got to get better on the first 2 days, which is the most exciting
two days
of the tournament, right? I mean, like Thursday and Friday. If you're a sports fan, don't tell me about how you're not having a good day.
No.
Please. It starts at like 11 in the morning and it goes till 11 at night. How could you not enjoy that?
I'm not kidding. I want them to make those days officially like holidays.
Well, the bars and restaurants would vote for that,
right?
For sure, because they would be packed all day if nobody had to work.
It'd be awesome.
They already get that anyway.
Yeah.
Right? People are like, I'm going to lunch. See you tomorrow.
See ya. I'm not coming back.
See you tomorrow. What? What'd you say? Nothing. Going to lunch.
It is the best time of the year, I think, though, in terms of a tournament. For sports, especially those first 2 days, like you mentioned, I don't think anything gets better than that. I mean, the amount of people that get involved in just watching these games, people that aren't even sports fans.
Yeah,
that I run.
I would love to go to a sports book in Vegas.
Oh, that'd be insane!
Like, how cool would that be? I've always wanted to do that, but something about work.
Yeah, you got
that prevents me from doing that.
Yeah,
but one day I'm going to go to a sports book in Vegas just to take in that whole atmosphere, what that's like. Like, people actually betting. Like, it's not just in a bracket. Like, they have tickets in their hand. And when buzzer beaters happen or somebody loses on a final basket by the spread and people go irate or they win because of that, like, I want to be a part of that. I want to see what that's like.
You got to do that. Promise
me. I will. I will.
Okay.
I will.
At least one time.
Unless I kill over tomorrow, I will do that. That is going to happen someday. So – you heard what Jimmy said, and we've talked about this a bunch because we've taken calls where people are like, yeah, look, who's kidding? Who? Duke's going to win it all. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. No, no, no.
Hold back.
Hello. No, they are not. Look, is Zion Williamson a freak? Yes.
Yeah.
He is a freak of nature. Like, we may never see another frame like that do that on a basketball court again in college basketball. But that doesn't mean they're the complete package.
No.
They have major flaws. They have warts.
Absolutely. And we've seen Duke. We've seen them be upset before in the tournament. This is not a team. I love how people go in and it's just like they almost like paint this team as like this is they'll never be touched. You know, Coach K and Duke, they're not going to be touched, especially this year with Zion. We've seen Coach K teams go down.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what makes the tournament so incredibly great.
Well, they can't shoot from the perimeter. Right. And Jimmy, that's what I was getting at, because we've talked about this. They are the worst three-point shooting
yep.
team in the country.
He said that.
Not in the ACC.
In the country.
In the country. They are horrible mm-hmm. three-point shooting team. Now, you saw how that affected them when Zion was out. I mean, they were
right.
a completely different team. Now, I get it. He also can mask a lot of problems. And this is what else he does. This is what I have said about Zion when he's on the floor. There's a little bit of a Mike Tyson effect. Hey,
yeah.
there we go. I used a 90s reference.
Wait
okay,
go.
He won a lot of he won a lot of fights mm-hmm. before they ever rang the bell.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he got in the ring, the opponent went, uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh. I'm in big trouble. Like, Why did I agree to do this? Like, this was a bad idea. There are going to be teams that come out there, especially at the beginning of the tournament, and they're going to go, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to see him, and they're going to, whoa. Because I'll never forget in, what was it, 03, the Connecticut team that won it all. Vanderbilt went to the Sweet 16 in Phoenix. They sent me out to Phoenix to cover that region. I think that was 03. The years are running together. But that was the Connecticut team that was
–
so I was sitting courtside. I'll never forget it. And, in fact, Michael Wilbon was sitting next to me to name drop.
Nice.
And Vanderbilt came out, and they're warming up. And so it's like, all right, this is, Alabama was out there.
Yep.
Syracuse was out there. And, you know, here you go. This is Sweet 16, man. This is cool. Somebody's going to the Elite Eight from this. And somebody's going to go come out of this Phoenix bracket in the Final Four. And then all of a sudden they play the music, and here comes Connecticut, and I'm sitting courtside, and I went, ruh-roh, whoa.
Yep.
Like, whoa, Vanderbilt's in big trouble. That happens. It does. I don't know how you cannot say that doesn't happen. I'm sitting there, and if I went, whoa, this team looks – I mean, some teams look the part. They don't always play the part. That team looked the part and obviously played the part. The question is, can Duke overcome some of their warts because they have the whoa effect?
Factor.
Yeah, and teams are going to be nervous. But if they can't shoot from mm-hmm. the outside, no team has ever, as Jimmy said, cut down the nets being that poor of a shooting team as Duke is. So can they overcome that?
And that's the thing. I mean, I want to say with Zion, it's just hard to say that they're not going to make it to the Final Four with that piece. But let me say this. Without him, isn't it incredible to think that we wouldn't be probably even saying this because we saw what happened?
Oh, if he doesn't play, nobody's
right.
picking him.
But amazing to me that one team, it is a one player.
Even though they got lottery picks,
right.
plural.
Right.
You see what he does. He is the difference.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what makes Duke this year.
Yeah. I do not believe I'm going to pick them to win at all.
I'm not going to pick them to win them all.
They'll be the sexy pick. In fact, I think I saw ESPN was putting out, because they get millions and millions of people doing brackets.
Yeah.
And I think right now it's the majority are picking Duke. And I don't think I'm going to
do that
because I need to see it. I need to see them do something no other team has ever been able to do.
Yep.
And if it happens, cool. It'll be fun to watch, but I'll have to see it to believe it. I'm not going to pick them to win it.
I'm not picking it. We also had the discussion, too, because I was telling you kind of what teams they were all picking for the Final Four, and a lot of them had all these one seeds. And that's something that's rare, actually.
Right.
I mean, there's usually not every mm-hmm. single team is a one seed that gets to the Final Four, as crazy as that might sound.
Yeah, well, we were laughing about Virginia went out
right.
in the first round last year.
I keep picking them, and I keep on getting punched in the face.
Ooh. Well, you know Tony Bennett.
Tony Bennett, yeah.
From your days out west.
Yep, at Wazoo.
Yeah. So, and he's done a tremendous job.
He has.
But I can't imagine them having the early exit this year, because that would be a stain after last year. Like,
yeah.
Like, I kind of expect Virginia to make a serious run
mm-hmm.
because, you know, look, Tony Bennett's going to get there, and they all these coaches have to do the press conferences, and he's going to get asked about last year over and over and over again.
Yep.
And you know that's going to be – kind of in the back of their minds of, we cannot do this again. We're a one seed again. We cannot bow out early. So I look for Virginia to play inspired basketball. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the first hour of Darren and Donnick. We do that next. Well, I see Kayla is perked up. If you want to sing, go ahead.
Forgive my past. If you want to get with me, better make it last.
So this is your wheelhouse right here.
Man, I remember this
one. This is the old number one for Kayla. This is the heater, Ricky.
He's covering his face.
Give her the heater, Ricky. It's 90s night at Bridgestone Arena. You'll hear a lot of that. Wait till you see Chris Mason tonight.
Oh, my gosh. Mace.
I guess he's kind of going for the Vanilla Ice look.
Yeah.
Vanilla Ice-ish.
It's a good look.
Is that the right way to say it? Yeah.
It's a good 90s look.
So you know C. Mace is going to bring it. So be looking for that. Be on the lookout for that tonight on Fox Sports Tennessee. It is good to be Mike Trout today.
Ooh, baby.
He is closing in on a new 12-year, $430 million extension with the Angels.
Dang.
How about that?
It's incredible, but here's the first thing that always comes to my mind with him and the Angels. I feel bad for him. Not bad for him in terms of money.
No.
But, like, he really hasn't been able to reap the benefits of
of
doing anything on that team.
I said to you during the break, I said, good for Mike Trout.
Right.
And no one is going to pick the Angels to win.
Nope.
Like how weird is that? Like, usually when you see record-breaking deals, you're like, boy, that – watch out. Okay, they're ready to go. Nobody's going to pick the Angels.
No. I mean, that's the thing with these long-term deals, though. You're there.
You can probably thank Bryce Harper for that deal, by the way.
I was just going to say that.
I mean, Bryce Harper probably helped that because Bryce Harper was recruiting him, trying to get him to come to Philly.
Yep. I thought it might have happened even, you know.
The Angels – No.
Here you go. Here's a check.
How about this? Does this interest you in staying in Southern California? By the way, have you seen the winners in Philadelphia? Just hang here for $430 million. What did you think? Yesterday we went down to Miami. We had a really good conversation. Omar Kelly was funny. Covers the Dolphins. I mean, he just flat out said their mantra is tank for Tua.
Yeah.
I mean, hello, tank for Tua. So the Dolphins are absolutely they're not going to start Luke Falk, but I told him, I was like, if you truly want to tank for Tua, just start Luke Falk for the season, and you'll get your probably 1-15 record, and you'll have the number one pick overall. But anyway, we talked about Ryan Tannehill, we talked about Cameron Wake, a couple former Dolphins now on the Titans. John Robinson has been very, very active. What do you think of the moves?
I liked the moves.
All right, which one stood out to you?
Well, the one that you just talked about, and the backup quarterback. It's not something that we ever really get excited about.
Oh, I do.
You do?
Oh, I do.
Were you excited when they brought in Blaine Gabbert?
No.
Okay.
No. My point for the last 2 years is, once again, doing the Nick Saban, pounding the desk, please, for the love of everybody listening, John Robinson, please go get a capable backup quarterback because, you know, circumstances are different here. If you're New Orleans, I don't know why they're so hell-bent on getting Teddy Bridgewater and having a good backup. I guess one day they know Drew Brees is going to go away, but if you have a quarterback that plays 16 games every year, the Chargers don't need a backup quarterback because Phillip Rivers – I mean, there's quarterbacks in the league, Tom Brady. They play every game. You know, who cares? It's just a guy holding a clipboard, a guy in practice. But unfortunately, here, the circumstances are probably you need a backup quarterback that can play you a quarter – of the season. He needs to be able to play 3 or 4 games.
That's absolutely right, and that's just something that a guy like Blaine Gabbert wasn't going to do. At times we'd be like, okay, Blaine's pulling it together, and then it throws an interception and it's all over, whatever. With a guy like this, I mean, this is a starter. They're taking him from Miami.
Well, a starter that you don't want him to be the full-time starter. You don't want him for 16 games.
He's proved that he can't be a successful starter.
But
I'll take a former backup or a former starter to be my backup.
Yeah, that's where I am. And here's the part. Look, it was nothing against Matt Cassel or Blaine Gabbert. They were nice guys.
Nice
they were
guys.
Perfect for the room. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't have an issue with them personally, but it was just literally about performance. I mean, Matt Cassel 2 years ago was an absolute joke.
Yeah.
I mean, Their option was Mariota cannot move. Like, he literally can't move. He can barely get in and out of the huddle. But they felt that that option was better than putting Matt Castle out there against the Colts.
Which is crazy.
Right? That's how little they thought of their backup. So what is the point? Why do you have him here?
Yeah.
So then last year, this is what kind of did it for me. Kind of the same thing. They felt like the Wildcat was better options than putting Blaine Gabbert under center. And, oh, by the way, the biggest game of the year, when you need that option the most, one, your starting quarterback wasn't available, and two, Blaine Gabbert was an absolute zero in that game against the Colts.
Exactly. And you bring in a guy like Tannehill, and he can kind of do some of the things that Mariota does. I mean, not 100% because Mariota is rare.
But they are closer together than Gabbert or Castle.
Absolutely.
Like, you had to almost change things when they came in.
You did. And so this makes it easier for them to insert him when time being needs to. And we know that, let's just face it, Mariota is probably going to have something go wrong during the season. I don't want him to. But
nobody's
rooting for that, but that's just what it is.
We got 4 years of it.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed. So why would we expect year five to be different?
It's not going to be.
Yeah. So, and here's the other part. John Robinson pulls it off for $2 million, basically.
That was incredible.
I mean, think about it. Miami's paying for 5 of the 7.
That's pretty cool.
Now, he had to give up a fourth-round pick, but I have no problems whatsoever with that move. He is paying a backup quarterback, like I said, that's probably going to have to play 3 or 4 meaningful games, $2 million this year. And they had to give up a fourth-round pick. But – in the draft here in your backyard, you get to move up around.
Exactly. I mean,
you go from the 7th to the 6th round.
I think he did a really good job in the free agency period. I mean, I just think not only with him, I think with getting a guy like Adam Humphries, a slot guy that you can utilize. I mean, he obviously knows him very well from his time in Tampa, else he wouldn't bring him here.
It's a pretty cool story, Humphries told.
Yeah, I like it. That was an undrafted free agent. He's worked his butt off in this league.
Yeah.
So well, I think he'll fit in nicely.
I think you could tell early on that John Robinson was looking. Now, obviously, they have to be able to play, but he's looking for those type of guys,
yeah.
Those guys that are hungry, those guys that, you know, look. I mean, there's a reason why Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham were traded this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
They are arguably two of the best receivers in the league. You could make the case. Some people will tell you they're the two best receivers
right. In
the league. Now, others will say you got to throw Julio Jones. I get it. There are others, but – you could make the case they are the two best receivers in the league, and they just got traded away.
Yep.
It's not because of their talent.
No, and that's the thing. You have to have a locker room that can stay cohesive. That is one thing I will say since I've been here, at least, the Titans have had, is a cohesive locker room where there's no garbage in there. There's no dividing of it. It's a good locker room, and you have to give John Robinson credit for that with the guys that he's bringing in.
Yeah, and so Adam Humphries said he stood on the table for him down in Tampa, so that was cool. So you like – I think they addressed everything that they needed to address in free agency. I don't think they're done with some of the positions.
No.
But I think it helps solidify some of the positions. In other words, you get a jump start, and then you can finish it up with the draft.
The one thing that I do want to see now with Stocker gone is a tight end. I think that they need to bring in a tight end. I mean, I wasn't really on it before, but with him leaving – I'm a little bit more like, okay, that's something you should maybe address in the draft.
Would you be okay with a first-round pick?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. I don't maybe think first round.
I said –
What do you think? I mean
– Well, I said if you can get all the so-called experts and the scouts and everybody to come on this show and tell me that whoever, if it's the kid from Iowa or whoever – that they're the next Travis Kelce
or
Zach Ertz or George Kittles, then I'll say, okay, then use the 19th pick.
Yeah.
But if you can't definitively tell me that they're going to be at that level or you see that's in them, in this kid, then I'm out.
Yep.
Like, way
then,
out.
Then wait.
Don't just tell me he's going to be really good.
Yep.
No, I need to know that he's going to be at that level
mm-hmm.
because those guys change games, and then it's okay to use the 19th pick, but – if you're looking for more of a guy who can block and do everything, then you wait.
Then you wait, yeah.
You get those guys in the second or third round, mid rounds.
Yeah, no, I agree. And those guys are special, by the way, too. They only come around once in a while, right?
It's easier said than done, yeah. Right? I get it. Everybody wants a Travis Kelce or Zach Ertz or George Kittles. But, you know, it is also their job to find those guys, especially, you know, today's game. I think you need that elite tight end.
Mm-hmm. You do. It's a big part of the game.
Yep.
And it can change it.
We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about tonight's matchup. The Leafs are in town to take on the Predators. We'll do that to kick off hour number two. Also, David Poyle stops by at 11:15. More of Darren and Donnie next.